Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My co-host is Greg Kot. And today, Greg, we are excited to announce the winners of the 2023 Sound Opinions Writing Prize. This is our second year awarding three students at Columbia College Chicago for exceptional work in the field of criticism. We know a thing or two about that. Well,
we're still students in many ways, Jim. Absolutely.
Still students, absolutely.
You are right, Jim. And we want to thank our friends at the Goldschmidt Foundation. We're able to encourage these young writers, because of the Goldschmidt Foundation, to continue the tradition that we have dedicated our lives to, for better or worse. But I got to tell you, it cheers me to see students, as the three of these students are, writing criticism that's really incisive, very insightful, and continuing a tradition I think is really important about the cultural conversation we need to have around art.
Well, there's nothing more important. That's our contention, because every topic you can touch on in life, politics, religion, sex, is in the art. My students are sick of hearing that. We just spent 14 weeks of three-hour classes in reviewing the arts. We had some contenders for this prize, and you chose the finalists. Since I knew the students, I chose the first batch. You chose the finals. All excellent pieces on a range of critical topics. We got two music reviews and a great photography review. Will Lovell, Avery Herringa, and Hannah Flores are our winners. We're going to introduce them one by one. So Will took first place with a wonderful review of Drive Like Jehu. I mean, we write like 10 reviews over the course, Greg, and this one jumped out at both of us. You know, Will, we talk a lot in reviewing the arts about the importance of having head and heart, your emotional reaction and your intellectual analysis of a piece of art. You need both in a good review, and you need a strong thesis statement. So I was going to ask each of you, we're going to post your reviews on soundopinions.org, the website, but I was going to ask each of you to start by reading your opening paragraph, your thesis.
Sure, yeah. The early 90s saw punk rock evolving at a rapid pace. Three power chord structures morphed into dense, melodic progressions. Surface-level anti-authoritarian lyrics swapped with astute, multifaceted political criticism. And the sweatshine domes of brutish skinheads gradually became replaced by skinny t-shirts and swooping bangs. Amidst this many-footed scuffle, the four-headed San Diego serpent, Drive Like Jehu, lit a brief but blazing fire in the bedsheets of hardcore. Characterized by its dizzyingly angular riffs, bleeding anti-imperialism, and unyielding frenetic momentum, the band's second and final album, Yank Crime, remains a centurion of the 1990s new wave of post-hardcore.
Bedsheet of hardcore. Will, forgive me, were you even born in 1994 when this album came out?
Absolutely not.
So why the fascination with Drive Like Jehu and hardcore?
Well, you know, it's funny. I really wasn't into punk rock that much growing up, or at least growing up in Bloomington Normal. And it wasn't until I started working at a record store there that I really kind of like got my eyes open to punk through like a very Midwestern lens, albeit. And the owner of that store introduced me to a lot of bands and really got me into that sound. And I'd heard Drive Like Jehu before, but it wasn't until I went back to it and I was really like, wow, like this was, it's intense. And like, it's different than what like you really would think of the punk sound, at least, you know, a lot of people think of like 1980s, like hardcore to be very, you know, simple and there's not a lot going on. And it's very much surface level anti-authoritarianism. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, nuanced.
It was like, we don't like Reagan.
Right. Yeah.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of, I mean, if you look at like, you know, the East Coast stuff that, I mean, that's the stuff that's near and dear to my heart, but like this changed things for me.
All right. Yeah. Are you hoping to keep writing about arts, Will? I know you're deep in music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no matter where or like what I end up doing, writing will always be a part of my life in some form or another. It's kind of something that is like self-care to me. So yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Sounds a lot like us.
Yeah.
Well, the self-care part, you have to do it, right? Yeah, I don't think it's worth doing unless it's like a burning need. You'd have to be crazy to go into this business, but obviously we're among three crazy people here, so I feel right at home.
Avery, you came up second. They're all winners though. Lana Del Rey, did you know there's a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard? We haven't reviewed this one yet, Greg. So Avery's going to be our first Lana Del Rey review for this album. So give us your opening or your review.
Early on in Lana Del Rey's latest record, she makes a bold statement. "I'm a different kind of woman. If you want some basic bitch, go to the Beverly Center and find her," she sings delicately. Whatever you say, Lana. The refrain blends together a tongue-in-cheek sensibility with a coquettish melodic delivery, which is much of what's to come on the rest of the record. Her ninth studio album, Did You Know That There's a Tunnel Under Ocean Boulevard, is a feast of collaborations, ever-shifting sonics, and a relaxed playfulness amid many contemplations, and stands as a definitive work in her catalog.
I'm a different kind of woman. If you want some basic bitch, go to the Beverly Center and find her. I'm sweet. That's
a beautifully written paragraph, Avery. I do want to question you. So catalog, which indicates that you have listened to every one of her nine albums.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, good. And why is this one definitive versus all? Because I think there was a couple in there that were really great. In fact, she's so prolific, it's hard to keep up. So thank you for reviewing this latest record. You got to make the case here because she's made some really great records prior to this.
And also some kind of like...
Well, yeah, but poem, I mean, yeah. The more recent ones have been
the
really
more recent,
good.
She's been on a tear, yeah.
So why this one above all else?
I think that for the first time since her 2019 album, Norman Effing Rockwell, I feel like this is a true representation of her artistic abilities. The last two albums I liked, but I felt like they were a lot... She was kind of playing things safer. I mean, if you look at this latest album through the lens of like all music, yeah, it might not be as experimental or daring to some people. But in terms of her catalog, I think it's definitely, it mixes a lot of past things she's done and it kind of encapsulates a lot of what all the styles, the lyrical choices that she makes. It's kind of just a culmination record in my eyes that kind of builds off of each album. And it's kind of like without the preceding eight, I don't think she could have made this record. So I feel like it's kind of like the crown jewel of her catalog, kind of culminating all together.
Avery, remind us where you came from and what you hope to do.
I would like to keep writing about music. Got into journalism a couple of years ago in an intro class, and then kind of through that path, found criticism and wanted to focus on entertainment journalism or music journalism and stuff like that. So I really like to keep doing that. And I mean, kind of like what Will said, it's kind of like self-care. It doesn't feel like it's a task or like work, it's kind of just comes naturally, and it's still fun and enjoyable.
Warms your heart, doesn't it, Greg?
Really does.
We will happily cede these positions to all three of you at some point.
Yeah.
Last but certainly not least, Hannah Flores. Hannah had two classes with me this semester, Greg. Journalism as literature and reviewing the arts.
Glutton for punishment, huh, Hannah? I tell you.
I must not
two
suck.
Two classes with Jim DeGregatis?
Or maybe I'm an easy grader. I don't know. I'm not. Hannah, you are fascinated by photography. You were excellent at the visual art review, and you went to Blue Lotus Gallery or reviewed a show there. Tell us about that and read us your thesis.
Chinese street photographer Fan Ho focused on people's humanistic and candid qualities, with most of his work consisting of photos of city life and those that live in it. Approaching Shadow is a minimalist photo taken in 1954 that displays a woman, Ho's cousin, posed against the wall at Queens College in Causeway Bay, Hong Kong, looking down as the shadow approaches her. Ho deliberately uses lines and lighting in the photo's composition to portray the devastating and inevitable loss of youth.
These are all 650-word reviews, Greg, and we've read them all.
Yeah, we read every word, yeah. You know, Hannah, I've been going to, I love art galleries, and I find some of the best criticism that I read anywhere in any genre is those little placards on the wall next to a certain painting. There may be just like a paragraph, but I think that criticism is really good. So my question for you is, you know, arts criticism can be a really esoteric kind of thing, but I'm curious about where you sort of picked up pointers about how you wanted to express yourself when you're criticizing a piece of work, of art.
Yeah, well, I'm not necessarily in fine arts or visual arts. I'm into film, but I kind of approached this as like I was criticizing a shot or a still from a film, and like so much can be told in just like one frame, and that's kind of how I approached this photo.
Mm, that's really insightful. It's always been said of Stanley Kubrick that you could take any of his films, isolate one frame, and they're all beautiful. Because he started out, you know, Hannah, as a photographer for Life magazine, and they're all just, it's all about the framing. It's beautiful, his movies.
Absolutely. So, Hannah, does this kind of criticism, is this something that you'd like to continue doing?
Yeah, I mean, it was fun in Jim's class. I really enjoyed it. I'm more focused in film and post-production editing. I'm not necessarily like focused on writing, but just in general, writing is something fun. And after this class, I would like to keep it up for sure.
Well, you know, keep in mind that the greatest directors of the French New Wave of the 70s, Truffaut and Godard, all started out as film critics before becoming, and so did Jonathan Demme, writing movie reviews for the New York Rocker.
Yeah.
You could do both, because you certainly won't get paid much as a critic.
And make some real money, do something else, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love movies, and I watch them all the time, so might as well, you know, write about them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Will, Avery, Hannah, congratulations. You guys are excellent writers. Whatever you wind up doing, I'm sure if we're lucky, Greg, someday we'll wind up working
well,
for
that's right. Keep us in mind, kids.
Students like these. Take pity on the old men and their dotage.
Excellent stuff. Very inspiring. That is it for this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. And thanks to the Goldschmidt Foundation and all of our Patreon supporters for making this show possible. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media is wrangled by Katie Cott. Thanks for listening.